Welcome, Margarita. Thank you for joining us here. For those that may not be aware or know of Margarita's work, Margarita Mendez is a researcher, curator, artist, and educator whose work explores the intersections of critical ecology, experimental film, sound practices, and ecopedagogy. She has curated a number of major Biennale shows in Liverpool, Istanbul, and other places, and also has contributed to several educational platforms, too many to name here in a sense, but also holds her PhD from the Centre of Research Architecture at Goldsmiths, where she was supervised by Susan Shupley, who also contributes to the book, The Word for World is Water, and who, of course, for some of us, in WSA spoke recently about their work on ICE and ICE as a witness and some of the violence that has been, I guess, recorded through ICE. So Susan's work in that direction is also part of the book. Margarita also is currently a tutor at the Geo Design Master's Program at the Design Academy in Eindhoven and is also affiliated with both Hangar in Portugal, the curatorial space, and also a number of other organizations. Welcome, Margarita. It's so
Thank you,
nice to see you.
Teresa. It's great to exchange this place together. Yes. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you. And so just, I guess, as you know, we have this edition of talks that are following the elements. Last year was Earth, this year was Water. And in some ways, part of it is also introducing practitioners and colleagues' work to those who are tuning in. We had the fortune to meet, or I say I had the fortune to meet you many years ago, actually, in 2007, 2008, when we worked together on a media art festival that I was creating in Portugal called And soon after that, actually, you embarked on the barbershop and also, if I remember correctly, your PhD, which was focused on sensing ecologies. How has that PhD research work, Sensing Ecologies, informed the direction of this book, and which for me was very much also about water, when I have bumped into you as well in various different ways, and also sensing the rivers if of Lisbon, particularly the Tejas. Please share a little bit I guess the curatorial path that you have been walking in the last couple of decades and what sensing ecologies means for you.
Thank you, Teresa. There's a lot to tell, but we have half an hour, so I'll try to focus. I guess my journey after studying fine arts in Lisbon, and I started running DIY project spaces, places of encounter, places of exchange and transdisciplinary research. That's pretty much around the time that we met. And I think, the kind of mixed media arts kind of scene and the research-based practices was something that was very interesting for me as a foundational space to think through art as a collaborative process of inquiry. So that really shaped my journey along the way. And I guess how I've turned into water, besides growing up by a river and, being a very kind of coastal person all my life, kind of an amateur scientist in a way. I did a lot of deep sea mining activism and anti-oil extraction activism from 2015 onwards here in Portugal. And I started a coalition against deep sea mining, national one, that became also a European coalition. Now we have a moratorium in Portugal against deep sea mining. And I was very much in touch with activists from the Pacific. So, kind of the oceanic kind of alliances between different kind of ontological frameworks of the rights of nature and the ocean as heritage of, humankind. I don't like to really say humankind, but like ocean as heritage, let's say, it was something which was pretty much under debate among activist colleagues over the years. So I've done this kind of advocacy work, very kind of impromptu alongside a curatorial journey and an academic journey. But it really kind of influenced the topics, the alliances, and the contextual research that I started developing. So during my PhD, which started on ocean mining and ocean noise, And then with a visit to the petrochemical corridor in Louisiana, it went towards, toxicity, which was not only sonic toxicity, but actually other forms of disposal of energy and of
Also.
chemicals along the riverbank. So I did this kind of very transformative journey of 10 days supported by Haus der Kultur in der Welt Berlin during the river semester organized in the Mississippi River in 2019, which was a kind of foundational fieldwork moment that really transformed how I report the field. And I started conceptualizing sensorial ecologies and developing new writing methods, and new methodologies of inquiry in watery spaces. So
I think
my
that, yeah.
just to follow up, my PhD actually, caught the lockdown moment. So I was drawn towards the River Tejo in my city, and I started a series of water walks. And the series of water walks, were also some of these methodologies that brought water as a kind of eco-pedagogical strategy to, gather with communities. And somehow it led to this book later on.
No, it's really beautiful to hear this story actually, because the book, the word for world is water, actually opens. I'm just going to read here. Water teaches us that nothing stands alone. And I think this is really such a beautiful line to open with, because actually the story that you've just shared links very much to, in a sense of these conversations not standing alone. Julia Champman's work, as I was sharing, that opened up our series, and also Kathy Hind, actually, who will give the next talk in July, also during COVID, actually really went down and deep into her local rivers, and some of the eco river work that she has been doing has also been kind of like part of that. So I think this connection there, just on a kind of I guess research practice direction, is really vibrant and feels very vibrant and real in what you've sort of said, in the sense of this particular conversation not also standing alone. The work I'm drawing here also on tuning into your wonderful talk that you gave for Sonic Acts, actually, was it, I think it was last year, where actually this notion of sonic and Anthropocene is something that you also speak to, and you were talking there about the sound of toxicity. Could you expand a little bit on that and what you mean by it?
Well, I guess, at the time I was researching also with different sorts of colleagues and running workshops here in Lisbon, also about the touristification of Lisbon and the change of soundscapes due to, logistical developments and the influx of, mass tourism and so on. So we were thinking of this kind of transformations in terms of energy inputs, in environments. But through the Mississippi work, I was also thinking of, chemistry and toxicity in a more expanded way. Like, for example, the cancer alley where I've canoed and did my field work, it's a place that at some points has a cancer rate which is 600 times higher than in the rest of the United States, particularly around the neoprene factory. So it's full of oil refineries where there used to be plantations. So there's a kind of transferal of, the kind of distribution of labor from plantation labor to kind of, in a way, toxic labor. And this stays in kind of endocrinological disruptions in the bodies and in the lives and in the communities that inhabit, the Mississippi surroundings and its many tributaries and bayous. So I was trying to think about the river as this kind of expanded system, an expanded, not only auditory system, but an expanded like chemical landscape.
Hey. Thank you, Timo. I think we've had a short in sonic interruption if we're speaking about sonic anthropocenes here and listening protocols. Thank you for turning off. Yeah, Margarita.
Sure. So I think I was trying to explain how, it's in such a complex space as the Mississippi River, toxicity helps us to think about the temporality of environmental crimes, beyond, the current present tense, but actually in the sense of what Rob Nixon describes as a slow violence, something which is happening on a kind of a molecular scale and on an atomic scale, which kind of goes beyond, the threshold of the human life, as, a unit of an individual, but is actually pervading society and changing like all these kind of endocrinological exchanges for on a deeper way. So I tried to like destabilize this understanding of the body as a closed unit or an ecosystem as something which can be partitioned by, you know, a nature reserve even. And sound actually allows me, both as a methodology and as a tool for problematizing, how we still operate under like zoning kind of politics, right? Even our legal regimes, our regimes of protection, which we do need, you know, and they have a stand and they're very useful. But, you know, sonic toxicity and chemical imbalances, they actually operate in a much more complex way. And they help us to think about ecosystems in a more, I don't know, entangled and problematic way.
And within that, then, my understanding is that you also kind of came up with these notions of like listening protocols in a way. And one of the kind of things that has come through within our talk series is about methodological approaches and inquiries, whether it's like about writing with water or going with the kind of the tide or thinking about these sort of surfaces that the what Andreas was also speaking about in terms of the ethics of flow, for example, and the way that kind of water also sort of like the particular characteristics of water actually kind of speaks to being able to hold space with others in a sense, and that it's bound its boundarylessness in a sense allows us to maybe enter into a particular ontological like headspace. I'm curious how how your listening protocols, in a sense, might have actually exposed that or opened up that or brought people into sort of the levels of toxicity, the understanding of the levels of toxicity over time, over deep time, really, in some ways that you're referring to, and could you share a little bit about that methodological approach?
So, because I come from a very mixed and transdisciplinary field, no? So I don't use like a social science kind of method just along the way. So I'm more interested in like qualitative research methods, if one can say. And I'm very interested in testimonies, even though I studied in the research architecture PhD. Even before I entered, I knew I didn't want to operate on a forensic level because I'm more interested in people, in their experience, and the traces of environmental harms on communities in a, as a durational effect. So to approach listening as a way of encounter and not, for example, as acousticians do, looking at raw files on their computers without even listening to their content, which happens in the Gulf of Mexico a lot as I interviewed people. So I kind of, being a very hybrid thinker that comes from different backgrounds, I kind of destabilize a little bit how we make harder questions about the unevenness of sensory experience in ecosystem. No? If so, if we problematize from a different point of view, you know, how actually do we establish the spaces of listening or the sensory infrastructures that map or monitor certain ecosystems, and you know the technopolitics around it, you know, and the jurisprudence around these spaces. So there's a lot of kind of vocabularies I think that are underdeveloped, and a lot of kind of sensory debates that are very kind of anthropocentric. So in my writing, I try to, you know, open up some of these questions. So very pragmatically, what I do is placing harder questions to policymakers or scientists and help to think with them, you know, cross-disciplinarily, cross-methodologically. But on the field, what I do as well, I, for example, conduct listening circles. So I would play back some of my hydrophone recordings from the Mississippi River to the people that canoed with me over, you know, the fire at night, the bonfire. And we would listen back and kind of project what our different experiences bring to the table. You know, how does it activate PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder for some, or for others it resembles, I don't know, spaceship sounds, but can they actually listen to animals? Are they sensitive to the different frequencies and what's around them? When we knew that all our research was done in a place which is overexposed to 24-hour background noise. So in a way, the method, it's both sharing the research as we listen and creating an awareness also in researchers and scientists, a little bit of quasi anthropology of science in a way. So we kind of think about the political space of encounters through listening.
No, that's, I mean, I think we could go on just only on these sort of channels in a way, but I really want to sort of like bookmark for maybe a future conversation this this terminology in a way, because you know you speak of sonic conductivity and sonic channels and infrastructural subjugation and sensory disposition, and I think these are kind of words that I think are really meaty and part of what I would sort of see as the Mendes sort of writing kind of that brings us into those worlds about what you're sort of speaking to. But I can feel how all of this really informed then the editorial selection that is the word for world is water, and there's you know sonic practices that are kind of coming into this. And for those who may not have read the book, it was released this year by Spectre Books in Germany, and it's actually written, it's published in two languages in the same book, right? So we have English and we have the Spanish translations, and I guess that's because the book emerges from Arco in Madrid, correct? Could you give us a little bit of a kind of a quick summary of how the book came out? Because I understand it was part of their original Water series, correct?
Maybe
Or Water program,
I
yeah.
show the cover. Oh no, the video doesn't. Ah, there's the cover. Let's play with chroma key. Yes. Actually, it's an image from Susan Shoukly, like ice research, the in frozen rivers that we've kind of expanded and filtered. So yeah, the book came up as an invitation by Maribel Lopez, the director of Arco Art Fair, which establishes a lot of feminist grounded networks around art practices across Latin America and Europe. So it's a very interesting meeting point for different practitioners. They also have a hub in Lisbon. So they have an ongoing cycle of water commissions for curatorial projects. And then they invited me and Cartier Garcia-Anton to think of a project that then became a book. So we had carte blanche to do what we wanted. And I picked up, the research I've been doing for 15 years and, many colleagues. And what we did was we wanted to approach water not from a material standpoint, but from a kind of an element that you do research on, like a field of practice, and how the different kind of epistemological and ontological encounters with this field actually transform artistic research practices. So for Shoukly, for example, what does it mean to develop a practice of advocacy of water in a frozen river landscape? How do we need to shift the geophysical timescales of jurisprudence on this level? For Ailton Krenak, the indigenous activist from Amazonas, Brazil, so how do you think from, a forest landscape, and what are the, vocabularies of militancy or grief that one needs to have to storytell your way through this particular ecosystem? And we go on and on to the Himalayas, for example, with Karin Shrestha, or Sara Ahmed in the Ganga, who has the Living Water Museums in Goa, and they do like an ethnographic work of registry of oral histories in this region, to Nat Raha that does aquapoetics, beautiful work, to Carolyn Temper that works in the northern area around bogs, and the memories and the kind of embodied kind of field relation to this very kind of porous ecosystem that transforms a little bit how you kind of connect with ecosystems through different temporal dimensions. So in a way, the book is very focused on artistic research practices or curatorial research practices, which are often collective and has visual contributions as well as commission essays and a couple of reprints. And it's pretty much fieldwork based, So it's like, how do practices change in the different kind of water ontologies? So yeah, I think it has its own journey. And it really tries to look at these forms of world building from the field.
I mean, it's I guess it's also a phrase that you use, the polyphonic positions in some ways of water. And for you though, as the editor, was there some convergences? Because you know they're very situated contexts, and you know you can read each chapter quite separately. What was the some of the kind of points that really intersected for you as the editor?
On the beginning and the intro, we actually cite one of the authors that couldn't fit in the book, Leanne Simpson, an Indigenous scholar that speaks about Indigenous internationalisms through water. And we actually have contact points here in the mission and the militancy of some of the practices. For example, I think there are contact points between Susan Shipley's Rites of Frozen Rivers and Ailton Krenak's practice, in Greetings to
Agree.
the River. Or with the connection between the Ganga and Susan Shipley's work that looks at the temporalities of the Ganga and the sacred space of water, and the descriptions of Sara Ahmed, which are much more ethnographic, but also located in the water from the Indian subcontinent. So there are like little connections which are also territorial, but also kind of ontological in terms of relations between the practitioners.
I mentioned in our kind of prep, it was really wonderful to see actually Carolyn Tampra's work on the bogs in Norway and Estonia, because that bog landscape is actually connecting. Well, Carolyn's from Norway, but is working also on these bogs in Estonia as well, because this feels like it was a really watery landscape that also sort of connects Finland, also Ireland, where I came from. This bog landscape is actually my birth landscape in a sense. But one of the things that kind of came through in that chapter was this idea sort of almost of a sort of water somatics in a way, and this sonic bodily kind of tempo that seems to keeps coming back in all of the talks in different ways that we've been hosting is really kind of wonderful to see, because it is emerging through a sort of, let's say, a shift in registers. You know, this is what kind of like keeps, I guess, coming through for me in the conversations that we're having, how this deep work that the legal scholars, the activists, the anthropologists, the artists, the designers that we're kind of bringing in, curators that we're bringing into this fold are kind of like enabling that. You know, you speak about the rights of nature, that shift to a more than human, beyond the human world making. And I was just wondering if you could speak a little bit about those sort of senses of, I guess, sonic literacy or water somatics that kind of hold power for you, or you have been practicing, or
Yeah, well, I guess there's a lot to say in that great question. Starting from the text from Caroline Tampere, she actually took the invitation of the commission to propose a walk. So her text is a situated walk through different bogs. So it uses fieldwork notes or onomatopoeias as ways into this kind of boggy landscape. So it's a very kind of moist text, I think. And becomes actually an ecosomatic score, if you wish. So these kind of ecosomatic scores are something that I've been working for a while. So during the PhD, I was experimenting with different methods, like being interested in very kind of situated feminist kind of epistemologies and practices, and being connected with my own personal journey, of self-development. I was gathering all these kind of tools that went back to the body as a site of register or as a site of, environmental grief, and how can we open these kind of portals of catalyzing grief into militant action, and how can we develop kind of scores and practices of, attunement or awareness that actually channels some of these interscalar registers that the environment has on our body and leaves traces, that are kind of ineffable forms of evidence, and think about accountability in different ways if we open up these stories through also ecosomatics. So I develop a lot of scores in my practice and, collective activities, workshops, some of them with a collective that I had with artists and lawyers called Natural Contract Lab. We worked across different bodies of water in Europe and also a lake in Tunisia on the rights of river, on restorative justice, and we developed a lot of walks and scores over 5 years. And this has been an ongoing practice that I've shared with different practitioners, which became, a form of environmental literacy. So if my PhD focuses a little bit more on sonic literacy, also bringing in vocabularies to think about, infrastructure and what is it doing to, river and ocean monitorization. So the question of sonic literacy is very important in relation to the sonic Anthropocene and how we can think about, bodies in a discontinuum, but of relations. And then ecosomatics became a way into practicing this and experimenting.
Again, there's like I don't feel I feel like there's like four conversations to be had, but we had a wonderful conversation that Julia Chapman and colleagues also shared with Sue Reed, whose work you may be familiar with in terms of multi-beings, and much of that, which was held at Southampton about a week or so ago. Actually, we were kind of going deep into this kind of question of, I mean, there's of course a long history on the rights to nature from indigenous communities and supporting their own land and territorial claims, but also how it might be used at this moment in time and kind of problematizing some of that really also. So I think I'd like to kind of like again put a little footnote in a conversation around that that I'd like to have with you at another point, because it was very, very productive sort of set of conversations around that. But I guess we're coming close to to our kind of end of our session, and I wanted to again circle back really to some of the works that are presented in the book, because the book, as you have indicated a little bit with Carolyn's chapter, sort of experiments with formats. You know, we have images, we have pictures, we have poems, we have scores, we have kind of choreographies, we have people writing in a particular style that can like make you know, feel, you know, that fluidity of water in a sense. But also something that I kind of also felt is kind of connecting is a sense of repair and restorative justice and healing in a way that, you know, is either mentioned explicitly or not in some cases, depending on people's work. But it's something that I found very resonant for Repair Acts, which is a program that I've been now running for over 10, yeah, nearly 15 years. But it looks very Repair Acts kind of is situated within material cultures of repair, but of course this also brings us out fairly quickly into other kind of capacities. For you, what is the takeaway from the book in terms of working towards more restorative practices or regenerative practices? I'm not sure how you use words such as that or frames such as that. What is that healing that you think is kind of happening, or part of the work?
To think along the lines of a friend and author that has been inspirational for many of us working with writer Astrid Neimanis, I think before even like healing or repairing, I think we have to do a lot of grieving. So of course the book opens, narratives of resilience, but as we read in Ailton's text, it's important also to acknowledge the harms and to rethink where we situate our position before taking like also steps for repair. So yeah, I think it's a cautious and slow work to be done. Also because everything goes so fast around us and the work is both localized, but it also has to be cross communities, and to reach the policymakers, within our sphere. But so I think creative practitioners, at least on my standpoint, the ones I'm interested, they should work to opening vocabularies and sensory practices of awareness that then reach some of those spaces of desire for change. But that always has to be close to policymaking. So I think Susan's text is important because it does actually build some tools towards this. So I think in different ways, the practitioners open this kind of interscalar imaginary of how to operate along these lines, to do the cautious work, which is a lifetime's work, I think, of rebuilding relations with the more than human and those around us, those that have come before us and those to come as well, the future generations.
Margarita, it's wonderful to connect again after so many years,
Yeah.
your words are wise and resonate really deeply, and I look forward to our next encounter, wherever that might be, and hopefully it's face to face.